You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we had a public holiday in South Africa. Sorry, you had a public holiday on Monday for Youth Day.
Yes.
And then you came back on Tuesday, and I don't know, something happened. Someone lit a fire under something somewhere because the market just took off. Good performance in the United States on the Friday and the Monday helped matters, of course, but also suddenly the optimism around the political stability of South Africa, having been brewing to be a factor, suddenly became a real factor. The rand breaking 18 today, the bond yield, which was above 11% for the 10-year, now below 10%. Everything's fine.
Yes, and thank goodness for that. I mean, we're waiting a long time to actually get something like this happening. But just on that,
yes,
I think a lot of people must understand the difference between a trigger event and the reason or the cause.
Right.
Now, the reason why our shares went crazy was that they were just too cheap and have been cheap for a sustained time period. And then the trigger was this political settlement. In other words, if the market was expensive, you wouldn't have got a reaction like this, even if there was a political settlement that we hope will be good for the country going forward. Of course, we never know. We are dealing with politicians here.
That's very true.
You know, we'd be dealing with politicians here. So you never know what could unfold next week, next month, next year. However, I'm reasonably optimistic, I suppose, as I always am, is that the ANC, I think, realizes this is the last chance saloon here. You know, they've got to do better. And a lady who I worked with for many, many years, and an extremely bright lady, she introduced me to one of Einstein's sayings.
Which was?
That is, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yes. I know that one.
And this stuck with me because the ANC effectively has been doing the same thing, not in the first 10, 15 years. Since when Zuma took over, the ANC was doing the same thing over and over again. And I'm not talking about corruption and all of that. It was doing, we pay grants to people to keep them happy. We won't somehow can't create jobs because we don't want to let the private sector in. The private sector is against the people. And we will keep the people from, we'll stop civil unrest by just paying more and more grants to everyone. And we'll put incompetent people in high positions simply because of their clout in the party. And we'll just carry on and we'll all be okay.
So
you'll still retain power.
Being very cynical,
I realize that.
You're being very cynical there when it comes to grants. There are people that really genuinely deserve grants because they've been let down in so many other areas of the economy, i.e. the job creation of which you spoke, and also service delivery.
They don't want to.
Yeah, go on.
They don't want to let go of the socialist dreams where the state can provide, the state should provide. They don't want to let go of that. So therefore, and they don't want to tackle the education system and get that right. And they don't want to tackle service delivery and get all of that right. So you're not going to get jobs created. So then the only other way you can compensate the people so they can survive is by paying grants.
I once spoke to
If there weren't grants, if there weren't grants, we would have genuine civil unrest here.
Of course, yeah. I mean, look at the percentage of the population. Look at the percentage of grants paid out compared to GDP. It's a staggering figure. And everyone goes on about the wealth gap between the rich and the poor. But have a look at how much the people soak up of the government's money and the taxpayers' money. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. There's 2.5 people on grants for everyone who's got a job.
Yeah, that's staggering.
And it's admittedly, it's formal sector jobs. I know there's a substantially more jobs than formal sector, But that's the stats. So, I mean, to come back, to not be cynical now, I think the government actually realizes that we've got to do things differently. Now, when you look at the balance of power, the ANC's got 66% of the new government votes. And the DA's got 30-odd percent, 35%, and the IFP's got the balance. So, you know, in theory, there'll be a lot more market-friendly decisions made going forward than what we have had in the past. And that's what creates jobs. So I mean, let me paint a rosy scenario. The government does better. I'm not saying they'll do well. They must just do better. So that's better service delivery, getting a move on with Transnet privatization, although they won't use that word, getting more of a move on with Eskom, although it's not a thing of the past, but it's been significantly better the last 2 months. We've had no load shedding.
Yes.
And then just function better as a government. Teachers, healthcare, just function better as a government. And my old story, if we are going into a commodity upcycle over the next 2 or 3 years, we could actually see quite significant growth in South Africa in comparison to the past. Now, it won't be 5%, but, you know, maybe we get to 2.5%. Maybe we get to 3% in the commodity upcycle. The commodity upcycle will still be the big driver, but if the government does better and confidence returns a little bit and we get more capital investment and we generate some jobs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the economies won't go back to the years we had between 2002 and 2007, but it can resemble that over the next 2 to 3 years, maybe even longer. And that's quite a positive outlook for South Africa.
I was once given the following statement, I'm paraphrasing it, by a very well-known economist, quite a colourful character who hails from Pretoria. And he said, Lindsay, it's not the government's job. It's not the ANC's job to create jobs. The ANC government's job is to create an environment where jobs can be created. Okay, you can have a big infrastructure program because you've had a windfall from the commodities upcycle, and that does create jobs. But it's up to the private sector to create jobs because of the business-friendly opportunities presented by the government. And that's what they haven't done over 30 years, Wayne.
Yeah. And, I mean, certainly the first 15, 18 years wasn't bad at all. And considering the base effects of where they came from, what apartheid had done, I mean, they did a few fundamentally right things. They effectively got rid of exchange control. I mean, only the super rich can't take as much money overseas and get as much non-rand exposure as you want. It's available.
Right.
Secondly, they cut the tariff barriers. I think we had the second highest tariff barriers in the world. Only Tibet had more tariff barriers. They cut that back. So they achieved the sum total of the ANC's first 15 years, I mean, greatly assisted by the China years 2002 to 2008, is they achieved what was deemed, and I thought so as well, impossible. They killed inflation in South Africa. Inflation used to be 14, 16. The long bonds were 14, 15, 16. The next stop inflation was 4, 5, 6, and the long bonds were 7, 8, 9. Now, when you think that your cost of capital, your long-term cost of capital, almost halved because of what the ANC did. Okay, Christol started fighting inflation in 1988, blah, blah, blah. But yes, under the ANC's government, we killed the beast of inflation. People forget that inflation was 15%. And because inflation was killed, our long-term cost of capital halved, and then you got the big investment fueled on by China and the big returns from the housing market and et cetera, et cetera. So the first 18 years, you've got to actually sit back and say the ANC, especially considering where they came from, actually did a damn fine job. And I don't mince my words. They actually did a good job.
Very good. But well, hopefully it can be repeated now. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. They got caught up in this dogma of of socialism where they didn't. The biggest problem in South Africa, and hopefully it changes now, is that everyone was at war with everyone, was an enemy. You know, the government was an enemy, the private sector was an enemy, the unions were the enemy to the private sector. So there was a very, very, very toxic relationship at the absolute highest levels between all the parties that should actually be working together to better the country. And that's why the private sector didn't create jobs, because the government didn't really trust the private sector. I mean, it's literally as simplistic as that. You know, they think these guys here, they're not here for the people. They're not here for the country. They're here for profits. And of course, that is correct. They are here for profits. That's why there wasn't profits around the, you know, private sector. But in the generation of profits, they can generate growth. They can generate jobs.
Hmm.
You know, it's not just obviously a one-way story.
Since you've been going on a bit of a nostalgia trip as to when inflation was 15%, etc., I can remember buying a house when interest rates briefly went to 24.5% in South Africa. And I thought to myself, my bond, I'm paying the most I'll probably ever pay. So my bond repayments, yes, over the months and the years will go down. And sure enough, they did. But 24.5%, that's Turkey style. And when I say Turkey, I mean the country, not the bird. Wayne,
That's when Chris Stoltz took over. He said, I am going to slay this beast no matter what the cost is. Mm. And remember at that stage, we had that huge... Oh, another thing the ANC achieved, we had one of the lowest, assisted again by China,
yes,
one of the lowest government debt to GDP ratios in the world. It was 21%. It's now 80 or 70 or wherever it is now. So we cannot criticize the government's macroeconomic management of the country from 1992 through to 2008.
Good. Okay.
And then the things turned around, and the commodity down cycle and the government and.
Hopefully this is the start of a new cycle of optimism and proficiency and efficiency and competence.
I certainly hope so. Mm. I certainly hope so. But the one dampener on that, we thought exactly the same when President Ramaphosa took over.
Ramaphosa, I remember that.
Remember
that didn't last long, did it?
We thought exactly the same. Mm. Admittedly, he wasn't helped by the commodity cycle, and he clearly wasn't helped by the virus. The virus clearly didn't help either.
Nope.
And he did a lot of good things. He did a lot of good things. He just didn't do it quick enough.
Good. He's got a second chance. Wayne, I had a call yesterday from a value fund manager, you know, there's rare breed, and you know him,
yes,
you know him, but I won't mention his name, and he wanted to talk to me. He wanted a podcast. So I knew that things must be looking pretty rosy in his area of expertise, and indeed,
yes,
he put in a very, very compelling argument towards why value was starting to kick in again, and this has been an extraordinary chance for everybody. It only comes in once a decade.
And I think so.
Yeah, but he's right. Yeah. But
I totally agree.
But this is, so anyway, it was a great interview, and I urge you to have a listen to it. And then I sent the same message to someone else that you know, who's not a value investor, certainly not a deep value investor. And he said, yeah, this is all very well, but it's not NVIDIA-style stuff. And he came up with this amazing stat. He said, NVIDIA, since it was formed in 1999, its value has gone up by 591,078%. And I can't verify this, but it's probably true. It was a penny stock or something like that.
You must remember, it's one company, eh?
Yes.
It's one company. Look, this whole AI thing, I mean, I don't think it's craziness. The share prices might be too high and the share prices can come down, but it's not a flash in the pan. I mean, these are proper companies making proper profits with strong balance sheets. You know, so this is not a dot-com. I mean, I'm not saying the share price can't fall. Maybe there's too much overvaluation, too much hype in the share price. But if the share price falls 10, 15, 20%, which it did 2 years ago, then you would buy it, strongly buy it. So, I mean, I know I have in the last year, whatever, come across as a deep value manager, you know, banging my drum about the South African shares being cheap and the commodity cycle and all of this. But there's no winner over time between value and growth. There's no clear winner. It all depends on when you start measuring the performance and when you stop measuring performance. So you can do it one way, value managers look like kings. You do it another time period and the growth managers look like kings.
Yes.
So if you take the biggest growth manager I know, Mr. Shapiro, if the price is going from the bottom left of the graph to the top right, he buys it. And he has been hugely successful over the years as an investment manager, hugely successful.
50 and years.
Maybe that is the best way. Maybe that is the best way to manage money. You just buy things that go up. You don't worry about trying to pick the bottom here on these bombed out shares. But I think things move in a cycle. And I think up until the higher interest rates that we have now, during the period of very low interest rates, clearly 100% growth cycle. Absolute 100% growth. That's changed now. Interest rates are higher. So value may well make it come back. So in other words, if I had to use my experience and just for convenience sake, look at things on a 10-year basis, 7 of those years are growth years, 3 are value years, roughly speaking. So, you know, value managers have a tough 7 years. You know, the true deep value managers who wouldn't touch an NVIDIA and wouldn't touch a Magnificent 7 share, they have a terrible, terrible time for 7 years. But then when those 3 years kick in, man, do they do so well. You cannot believe how well they do. And then they go back to another 7 years of drought. So there is no answer to this. You know, I'm being honest now. Maybe Shapiro's answer is just the best.
Maybe just it is. I'm sure he'd be thrilled to hear that way. And I'll mention it to him when I speak to him tomorrow. And then the other thing this fund manager said to me, because he was clearly very excitable about what was going on, and quite right, because he's had his lean years, of course. And I said, well, what are you going to do now? You've got, he outlined his portfolio, its general construction and what types of stocks were in it. And he gave a few names as well. And I said, what are you going to do now that this is all out the way and maybe South Africa can consolidate its position? I said, you're going to add more? He said, no, I'm full now. I'm just going to sit back. Maybe I have to trim a few positions if they get too big for the mandate of the of the fund. I thought, what a lovely job. You just sit there for the next 2-3 years just raking in the profits.
Yeah. Look, value managers make one mistake. They always buy too soon. And when I'm in the value mood,
You do that as well, don't you?
Yeah. But growth managers also make one mistake.
They
cannot believe it when these share prices turn down and they don't sell.
Oh, I see.
They cannot believe that this is happening to them. Because, you know, in a bull market, now this is not casting aspersions on Mr. Shapiro.
Certainly not.
But in a bull market, everyone's a genius, eh?
Yeah, including commentators. Wayne?
Everyone's a genius. Everyone knows how this game works in the bull market.
Wayne, there was a very telling... the South African inflation figure was out today, 5.2%, which is boring, but a very significant one in the United Kingdom. Don't forget, inflation in the UK, at the height of the Ukraine crisis, went way over 11%. And now it's back at exactly 2%, which is the Bank of England target. Yeah, so it went shooting up and comes straight back down again, which is quite an achievement. And I think it's a very strange thing to say. I think Britain is more stable than the rest of Europe, which has gone very, very right wing. And its economy starting to show a little bit of life. Anyway, no, never mind that stuff. The other thing this chap said before we dropped the growth versus value subject is this growth fellow said, yeah, it's all very well, and he's having a good time, and well done to him. He's a nice bloke. But the banks are still at the same level that they were 5 years ago, and this is where you come in, Wayne, because you like the banks.
Well, the banks were so cheap a couple of months ago. I mean, they were like dirt cheap, and they've run hard. I mean, First Rand's up 20% in 7 days.
Crikey.
You know, Spar is up 33% in 90 days. Huh. You know, so if you get this right, it's magnificent. You know, if you can get these deep value stories right and the companies do come right and the cycle turns, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once again, and I didn't believe this when I was a youngster. once again, the only thing you get for free in investments is diversification. So have some value shares, have some growth shares, own the Magnificent Seven, buy some platinum shares, buy some SA retailers, buy some SA banks, have a global exposure, you know, have a bit of gold, have a bit of everything. Now, I know people say, you know, you'll diversify yourself into oblivion, and maybe that is a valid argument, possibly, but you never caught with your pants down if you diversified. Never. And more value is destroyed by making mistakes in investments than not just having, than not just chasing the winners. Because by chasing the winners, you can make mistakes. When you think of the go-go shares over the last 30 years, the true go-go shares, the Die Darters, the platinum shares 2002 through to 2008, all those myriad of new listings during the construction boom during the China years, the myriad of shares that financial services in the mid-90s, there are very few of them around it. Very few. You know, so the go-go shares now might be around in 20 years. They probably will be around because they are such well-established companies. But, you know, history is not kind to the go-go shares. It's just not kind to them. They were magnificent in their day, but their day didn't actually last all that long. Now, I must just hasten to add, I don't think the Magnificent Seven and the tech and the AI shares nowadays are like that. I really don't. But what can change is their ability to so outperform so massively.
You make some good points. I mean, we've had Einstein being quoted today, but you did your own Einstein moment there, Professor McCurry, with the diversification story. Anyway, we're happy. You, as a manager, an asset manager, not a growth or a value manager, more a little bit more value, I think. But anyway, it's a good day, and it's been a few good days.
Well, right now it would be more value, yes.
Exactly. Now, Wayne, I've got to tell you about a sad state of affairs that exists in the Netherlands. There are no Nandos. There isn't one Nando's outlet in this country. But just to tease you, that you can buy in certain fine supermarkets and online from a Dutch company, you can buy Nando's condiments, the quick marinade, the peri-peri sauce in three different strengths. You can buy the lemon and herb as well. So what I do is this. I go to my butcher and I buy a two-pack of organic chicken, but it's the leg and the thigh together on one piece with the skin on, and I buy that, and one is big enough for me. It's a huge piece of chicken, and you don't cut right through the thing, but about halfway through it you cut maybe about six or seven incisions in this beautiful piece of bird, and then you pour over the Nando's quick marinade. You pour it over it for about 3 or 4 hours before you put it in the oven. Then you cover it with foil. You put it in the oven in a baking tray thingy, and put it up to about 200 to 220, so it's really, really hot. And the marinade sort of crystallizes on the top. Then you turn it down, and because it's crystallized, the chicken underneath that, the heat is sealed in, and it sort of cooks itself. It almost steams itself. My goodness me! And it's as good, if not better, than Nando's. That's what I did.
And then you had the Nando's peri peri sauce on top of that.
Exactly. Cool, right. No, of course. Yeah, you whack that on as well. And goodness me, it's a delicious meal. Yeah, it is. I don't need a Nando's takeaway. What do you do with your chicken?
I'll tell you a story just quickly about Nando's. When I was in London with the world's biggest, we took the river taxi. Very nice. And we stopped at the Battersea Power Station, which has been massively developed.
Beautiful building. I love it.
It is truly a destination to go to. We went on the little lift that goes up one of the old chimneys. What I found interesting is that obviously someone was very symmetrical when they designed it. Yes. Because the one chimney was a false chimney. It never let out any smoke. Oh. But they had four corners, so they had to have four chimneys. But only three of them were actually used by the furnaces.
Oh, that's clever.
But anyway, that's beside the point. In the food section, the restaurant section there, I mean, there were some really upmarket restaurants. And then you had, you know, the normal fast food type of things. In there is the biggest Nando's I have ever seen.
It's so big in Britain. It really
is. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. It's
Now, look, I must say, I don't try and imitate Nando's. I just go and buy Nando's.
Yeah.
They've got a new flavor out. It's a whole chicken. I've got a new flavor out, but I just can't remember its actual name, but it's a sort of byline is, what sorcery is this? And it's not strong, but it's got it's not peri-peri strong. It's I don't know, maybe even a little bit like, you know, orange type of taste to it. And you get it with yellow rice with some raisins in it. It is truly delicious. Now, I just go and buy Nando's.
Well, I don't have that luxury, unfortunately.
And then in my garage here, we throw a party at the end of each year. And we have some sweets and some cool drinks. That's a real garage party. And, you know, we give out little awards and, you know, who won this award and who won that award. And we have some sweets and that. So I asked the mechanics here, I asked the guys, what do you want to eat to the person, Nando's?
Really? I remember.
No one wanted McDonald's. No one wanted KFC. No one wanted Steers, Burger King, Nookies, Nando's. That was it to the person.
And I think I'm right in saying, I mean, it's such a great story. And, of course, was listed on the JSE. And I think it delisted when it was around £1.50 a share or something. But it started as a stall in that festival they have every year, the Portuguese festival, Lusito Land. Is that correct?
I think it happened. Yeah. Yes. And the Portuguese festivals just happened last week. I think, and I've got three things about the Portuguese festival. First of all, when you see those signboards go up, you see two land, I'll come back to that. Yeah. When you see those signboards go up, you know winter is just about here. Because every week when that festival is on is the coldest week of the year so far. Somehow it's astonishing the coincidence between Lusito Land and the arrival of winter. And it was exactly the same this year. Last week was freezing, and that was when
in Macquarie terms, it's freezing. Anyway, go on.
Freezing. Second thing is, it's not at Lusito Land anymore. I think that site is history. I might be wrong, but I think it was at Nasrec. I think it was at Nasrec. So the Lusito Land. And the third, I went to it once at Lusito Land, and I absolutely froze. I mean, you couldn't – Lusito Land didn't – it was all like tents and trestle tables. You know, it wasn't permanent buildings per se.
No.
And I got some peri-peri chicken there. By the time you sat down at your trestle table, the food was cold. It was absolutely freezing.
Gosh. Huh.
They're similar when I lived in Maritzburg, when the Royal Show was on, you also knew that was the start of winter. I never went to one Royal Show where you also didn't freeze to death.
Well, we'll see. I think you've got some colder days to come. Wayne, I've got to go now.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for your words of wisdom and also your reminiscences over food. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.